Are you rolling, Debbie?
A third atomic reactor now is breaking down as well
Really?
In Japan, yeah.
The Kishore Kalashini?
Number one broke, number three exploded this morning, and number two was starting to have problems. And the American Army had an aircraft carrier, the American Navy, that they were overexposed to radiation, and helicopters of the American Air Force were overexposed. Shem Yirachem, what the end results will be. The death toll will be astronomical, and who knows, for years to come. It's like Chernobyl. So in Netzer Yaakov, and already here, a politician from Kadima criticized Netanyahu for, as we say in English, dancing on the graves and permitting the few hundred buildings he permitted. It's beyond words how Jews can be so distant from any concept of Eretz Yisrael and be so foolish and stupid, beyond words. Anyway, be it as it may, we have to learn. Today is Monday, let me get the date right, March 14th, 2011, and here we are approaching Purim, still in winter, but the spring, the summer, not far behind. By the way, I want to just start this year by making clear once again that in my lecture on the book on Reb Moshe Scherer, it is absolutely clear to me now that Agudat Yisrael had nothing to do with negating my major role in all that happened with Agudat Yisrael and Russian Jewry. And they sent me now, just I can show you, this is a copy of the coffee table book that Agudat Yisrael published the year after Reb Moshe died, Reb Moshe Scherer, His Life and Legacy. And take a look at the size of the book. It's a coffee table size. It appeared in 1999 on the first Yahrzeit. And when it comes to Russian Jewry, the introductory page, the center of it, is a letter from Reb Moshe Scherer to me. So you see here that Agudat Yisrael certainly is not involved in negating my role. And any word I said, if I said me something negative about Agudat Yisrael, I have to apologize and take it back. But Yezrat Hashem, this issue will not die, but it's too early to make it headlines. Let my volume appear. Now, we're in the middle, we asked a very basic question, how God could allow it to happen. And as I said, this is an unfair question. Man has total freedom of choice. And man can be a tzaddik, man can be a rasha, man can kill millions. Man has total freedom of choice. But nevertheless, the question is asked, and even in Jewish theology, the question is asked. And as I said last week in great detail, there's only one answer, Hester Panim, which means we as humans do not understand that. And that's Akeita Yitzchak, that's the Sefer Iyov. And it even means Gedolei Gedolei Yisrael. And that's what I showed you last week with Chatzkul Levenstein and that amazing quote. And to be honest with you, as I said, put ourselves in the position of Gedolei Yisrael. If we were the Chafetz Chaim and we were in Europe and we knew that 95% of the children raised in America were becoming Mechallelei Shabbos, maybe we too would say, stay here in Poland, stay here in Russia, earn a little less. We're only humans. I'm speaking for myself, believe me. And you think you have Ruach HaKodesh, you would know what to answer. And that answer is no different than living in the state of Israel. And sometimes I'll hear foolish people say to me, I can make more money in America and it's an easier life in America. I'm not certain this is true anymore, but you hear this being said, and I'll always say to them, but to live in Israel has other advantages which certainly compensate. So we can only judge, we're only humans. What's beautiful about my analysis last week in my exposition is you don't have to have enmity in your heart towards the right-wing world. That Das Torah is not viable as some understand it, that Chachamim are totally wrong, they're in the wrong religion. As far as ex cathedra, that's not part of the Torah religion. But nevertheless, we can understand that Rav Chaim Moisa answered what was logically correct. The fact that he was wrong is, as Rav Chatzkel said, God willed otherwise. And that, of course, is the Rav with looking over your shoulder and Machloket Yosef the Echad. And it's a powerful answer, it's a powerful approach. All right, I wish I could end this part of the lecture here and say to you that everyone accepts Hestapanim, and that's where it ends. If I were to do that, I would not be intellectually honest with you, because the truth of the matter is that very few talk about Hestapanim, and we get involved with tremendous theories that have motivated and pulsated within the hearts of hundreds and hundreds of thousands of Torah Jews. And I want to begin. Michael, did you want to ask a thing? By the way, I saw you yesterday. You didn't see me. I flew by on my way out to Talpiyot, and you were either walking from the Shtiblach or to the Shtiblach at the time.
No.
It was Shachris.
Right, I'm Shachris here at 9 o'clock.
9 o'clock. So I saw you coming out. And, yeah.
We just invoke man's ultimate free will.
Right.
Are we really causing serious theological problems because we believe that the divine will is on everything? I mean, if you look at...
You're raising the classical question, how Kotzafui Vereshit Natuna. That's what you're essentially asking. And no one has a perfect answer to that question. Make the question sharper. That if God knows everything that's going to happen, how do we have free will? That's essentially what you're asking.
But that's not ultimately what I'm asking.
Why?
I'm asking, we believe that God acts in history.
So you say that even without free will? So I understand what you're saying. And I still say that you're just a shoot-off of the most classic answer of all. And if you recall, I spoke about this last year, I believe, or 2 years ago, I dealt with the Rav dealing with it. But there's certainly, I agree with you, that how could God allow this to happen? In other words, even within free will, what you're saying, there has to be a limit to evil. How could God allow so much evil to go wild, to go unchanneled, to go limited? And ultimately, there's no black and white answer. You're coming into the whole question of Yechazek Hashem et Leif Paro. And if God, how does he, by Yechazek Hashem Leif Paro, a man should have free will? All right, these are classic questions. All the Rishonim deal with it. And I agree with you that I'm being a bit too popular when I dismiss the question, how can God allow it to happen? I agree with you. But nevertheless, the stress has to be on how could man be so evil? And I faced this problem.
You know the answer to that question. Man is capable of doing ultimate evil.
And he has free choice. This is what God gave us. And because he has free choice, look what Hitler, look at Gaddafi today. Look how this human being is acting, that even the whole Arab world has turned against him. But this is man. This is the way God made man.
The ultimate answer that we're incapable of understanding God's behavior.
Right.
Then why do we have to write book after book after book after book after book?
Well,
that's ultimately the only answer we can give.
One second. You're absolutely right. But nevertheless, man tries to understand, and we try to come out of it with some understanding, with some vision. That's just what we're getting into. But Hestapanim has to be basic to the Holocaust. And what Hestapanim means, even for Tzaddikim, look into the Chazon Ish, no one says it better, Ein Hashkacha Geluya, and therefore we have no din of Apikoros Bezman Hazeh, and that's why Ein Malin V'Ein Moridin, all that does not apply Bezman Hazeh. So you're right. I can't give you a black and white answer. I can't be any better than all the theologians that have struggled with it. But coming now to your point of view, that's what we're going to begin today. That man somehow is not satisfied with Hestapanim, and he has to find something more basic, and he has to involve God, and he has to try to understand, why did God allow this to happen? Why is God so angry? Okay. gentlemen, the point of view that's attributed to the Satma is not really the Satma. It begins already with an open Gemara, Ketuvot Daf Kofyud Aleph Amid Aleph. And this Gemara becomes basic to modern theology, and I'll come into it in a moment, but first let me give you the Gemara. Kofyud Aleph Amid Aleph, it's based upon the Pasuk in Shir HaShirim. Hishpati etchem b'not Yerushalayim b'tzva'ato b'ayalot ha-sadeh, the Jews are told, God says to them, I make you take an oath that you're not allowed to rebel against the nations of the world. And the Gemara spells it out, the Jews had to take three different shvuot. One, shelo ya'alu Yisrael b'choma, that you're not allowed to fight and try to capture back the land of Israel by force. Two, shelo yimredu bi'olot ha'olam, that you're not allowed to rebel against the nations of the world. Whatever they say, you have to accept. That is talking, of course, on a political level. That doesn't mean if the nations of the world say you can't observe Shabbos, that you're mechalel Shabbos, but it means the lifestyle, this civic, civilian lifestyle that the nations of the world live, we cannot rebel against them. And the third oath is given to the Gentiles, it's not the Jews, Shelo yishtabdu b'hem Yisrael yotem midai, and that the nations of the world will not enslave, torture, kill, punish the Jews more than is considered acceptable. What that means, more than is considered acceptable, I think I can give you a simple example. When you raise children, there always has to be a carrot and a stick. So, you know, you have to say to a kid, if you'll be good, I'm going to give you a candy bar. If you're not going to do your homework, you're not going to get the candy bar. All right, this is part of life. We don't hit our children today. All I can tell you is I don't ever recall my children hitting their children. My generation certainly got smacked around occasionally, but they're nothing serious. Today we don't use physical punishment, but you do use a carrot and a stick. I still remember in the Yeshiva Beit Medrash, one of my fondest memories is Rav Shmuel Eliezer Vonk. Again, it's a name that's been, it's unbelievable. His name has been left out of the Rosh Yeshiva list. I never saw anything like it. There was a picture of Rosh Yeshiva I showed you, 1943, I think it was, or 44, and they write unidentified. If you want to know the real story, I'll tell it to you privately. I don't want to record it because some of the people are still alive. But it's very sad. But Rav Volk was my Rebbe before the Rav. And I remember him sitting in the Beis Medrash learning with his son Benny. Benny was his second son. Moshe is no longer alive. Benny Nebuch is incapacitated. Benny was a genius. He inherited his father's mind. So he was learning Tosfot with him. And Benny must have been a kid of 12, 13. And he made a mistake in the Tosfot. And his father says to him, poor Benny, no penny. In other words, he used to give him a penny if every time he mastered a Tosfot. You don't realize today, you're laughing, David figures a penny, what the hell is a penny? A penny then, the New York Times cost 2 cents. So a penny bought you candy. It was a matbeya, chaticha ruyali hit kabeba, to use your Yoredeya language. And I can still hear a folk saying, poor penny, no, poor Benny, no penny. So it means the nations of the world are tried at times, they'll have to smack us around, but within the framework of what's acceptable. Now, what does the pasuk mean? Hishpati etchem, and it mentions tva'ot ayalot, animals. Tva'ot ayalot hasadeh. Listen to these words. Omer Reb Elazar, Omer lechem hakadosh baruch hu, im atam mekaymim et hashvua mutav, v'im lav, ani matir b'sarchem kitzva'ot uka'ayalot hasadeh. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu was saying that if you observe, I will protect you. And if you don't observe these oaths, I'm going to turn you into chayot hasadeh that are hunted, that are shot, that are destroyed, that become free for all. Anyone can bring them down, shoot them, cut them up, eat them. That's exactly what's going to happen to the Jews. Okay, now this is the Gemara. All right, this is an agata. Never forget. It's an agata. Do we paskin halacha according to an agata? No, you tell me. Absolutely not. Agada l'chud and halacha l'chud. Whenever it comes to agadot, you have many different traditions and many different points of view. In the Midrash, I once asked Rav Yosef Weiss when I was a kid of 14, so 15. So I said to him, Rebbe, there's so many contradictions in the Midrash Rabbah. Who's telling? What really happened? What's the truth? So he gave me a classic answer. It's all true. You understand? Even though there are many contradictions, it's all true. All right. When it comes to Agada, you all know La Halacha, we don't paskin Agada. It has a theological concept, a philosophical concept, a Hashkafet concept. Nevertheless, when the Zionist movement began, and we'll come into this in detail, but the Zionist movement was shocking, was revolutionary. Because until the Zionist movement, every Jew said Lashana Haba B'Yerushalayim, but for over 1,000 years, he did nothing about it. Didn't lift a pinky, didn't lift a finger. Lashana Haba, it was some apocryphal dream, some messianic dream, a vision far off in the future. Nothing to do with me today, now, here. Suddenly the Zionists came along and the Zionists said, we have to go back, we have to build the land, we have to go in Aliyah, we have to raise funds, we have to buy up the land. What? What are you talking about? And those that oppose Zionism pulled out this Gemara. And this Gemara became a basic part of the anti-Zionist platform. Chas v'chalila, you should attempt to bring about Jewish sovereignty in the land of Israel before Biat Mashiach. And this begins already wherever there was anti-Zionism. Munkach. And you have to tell the truth. What I'm going to say now, a lot of people tried to push it under the rug. Munkach, Lubavitch, the sixth Lubavitcher Rebbe, the fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe, who already functioned at a time that Zionists were on the map, were totally, completely, absolutely opposed to Zionism. And then they quoted this Gemara as well. Bells, 100%. So that the Satmar Rebbe, who basically is a descendant of the Sanser Rav of the Divrei Chaim, of Rav Chaim Halberstam, this is his family, these are his cousins, these are his forebears, he grew up in this environment where this Gemara was quoted in shining gold letters. And as you know, everyone maledicted the Zionist movement, and following World War II, when the Satmar Rebbe reestablishes himself in the United States, and I don't have to tell you, the success of Satmar is one of the unbelievable stories of rehabilitation and reconstruction after the Holocaust. I mean, when the Rebbe came to America, how many Satmar were there? How many people were from? How many people cared? How many people were willing to rebuild, to sacrifice, Take a look what Satmar is today. It's one of the most potent forces in New York State. They vote en masse. I don't have to tell you what that means in a democracy. Generally, in a democracy, inevitably people split 6-4, 5.5-4.5. If it's 6-4 already, it's like a landslide. Because what is democracy based upon? Democracy is based upon human beings. And human beings think differently. Growing up in America, how many times did you get involved in the debate, Democrats, Republicans? I remember walking the rough to the subway. One time we had to go downtown, so we walked them from the yeshiva, you know, Washington Heights. We're walking the rough from Amsterdam Avenue to the 7th Avenue train on Broadway, I think it was. And we're walking Rebbe, and it was during the Eisenhower was running against Adlai Stevenson. And we're asking Rebbe, what do you think will be? And he praised Stevenson to the worst guy, and that he's an intellect, and the man understands, and he has knowledge. But Rebbe said, he votes for him, but he can't win. So he said, Rebbe, why can't he win? He says, because the masses aren't on that level. They love Eisenhower, the general, the man who freed Europe, and the insight. But this is a democracy. And you can debate from today to tomorrow. What's more important, to have a charismatic general who freed Europe, who freed the concentration camps, or to have, they used to call him an egghead. They used to call Adlai Stevenson an egghead. He was an intellectual. He was bald. He looked like an egg. He was an egghead. And you can debate from today to tomorrow. But Satmar, hundreds of thousands of people vote whatever the Rebbe tells them. Do you understand what political power that is? And Satmar, tremendous success. Excuse me? We're talking now Rabiol Teitelbaum, the Rebbe who came out. We'll talk about him in great detail later on, but I just want to deal with this concept that he develops. Now, following World War II, when he saw that the Zionist movement was succeeding, and they declared a state of Israel, and Israel's on the map, he came out with his classic volume, Vayoel Moshe. The man was a genius, even the title, Vayoel Moshe Lashevet in Yitro Chatno. It says about Moshe Rabbeinu that he remained in the land of Jethro, his father-in-law, Vayoel Moshe. He was happy to remain in Midian. Was Midian in Chutz Laretz? Absolutely. If he's happy to remain in Chutz Laretz, it's a play on words. Vayoel Moshe. David Deutsch is going to be in Kew Gardens Hills next semester. He's going to land the college. Ah, he's the happiest guy there. Vayoel David Loshevet in land the college, the Kew Gardens Hills. You understand? It's a play on words. Vayoel Moshe. What are you telling me about Israel for? What are you telling me to go in Aliyah? What are you telling me about the Zionists? I'm the happiest guy alive to remain in Brooklyn. The title itself, you follow me, Danny? The title itself, the Satmar Rebbe was, you're not dealing here with a lightweight. You're dealing here with a heavyweight. It's unbelievable. Now, in the volume, there are three main sections. One deals, the first one is called Maima Shlosh Shvuot, which we're going to talk about today, deals with the three oaths. Number two, Maima Yishev Eretz Yisrael, and number three, Maima Lashon HaKodesh. Essentially, what number two and three talk about is very simple. Number two goes into the whole concept that there absolutely is no mitzvah to go on Aliyah today because you are going to a country where the overwhelming majority of the people are apikarsim, mumarim, mechalalei Shabbos, ochlei nevedet and treifot. And of course he quotes the Rambam in Hilchot Deyot that better to live among goyim than to live among Jews. You have to that amechalalei kol haTorah kula. You have to run away and live in a desert, not to be influenced by Jews who mechalal Shabbos. Lashon HaKodesh is a famous maima, how you're not allowed to speak it, that it's a holy language, and Chas V'Chalila, you should use it in your daily speech. Mintonaret in Yiddish or Ungarish. You can speak Hungarian, you can speak Yiddish. In the United States, you can speak English already, but Chas V'Chalila, not Hebrew. And by the way, I have to tell you, the Sakma take it seriously. I have a student, at the time her name was Pearl Freshel, today it's Pearl Herzog. She lives in Lakewood. She writes occasionally for the Jewish press and other papers. A very brilliant lady with a doctorate from the Sorbonne, if I'm not mistaken, or two doctorates even. Father was Reb Tuvia Preshel, who lived really well. He taught Talmud at the seminary, big Talmud Chacham. Her brother was my student, Dr. Shmuel Preshel. So one time, Pearl came back late from the Sorbonne to America, and the only place she could get a job was teaching English in a Satma high school. And one time she comes in to teach, and the girls are noisy, and she says, "Sheket!" And a hush goes over the class, and a girl blurts out, "Mintodas nishzakin, you're not allowed to say that. It's Lashon HaKodesh, Shah, still, that you can say. But Chas V'Chalila, you cannot say Sheket." So that's real. However, I don't want to deal with that. I want to deal with the first maima, with the unbelievable development of what it means, the three oaths, and why God punished us. Why God brought about the Holocaust. What did the Gemara say? If you don't follow the oaths, I will take your flesh and feed you to the Chayot HaSadeh. You'll be no different than the deers, than the reindeers that are running around, just as they're captured, slaughtered, and eaten, the same thing will happen to you. And all Hitler did was bring the Gemara to life. And I read to you, and I paraphrase to you, you have to see it inside. I don't believe there's an English translation to the best of my knowledge, but it's very important that, as a good friend of mine, Aaron Rakefet, said, and if you don't believe me, you can see in the Wikipedia under his, that if you don't know the Vayom Moshe by heart, you cannot be a good Zionist. Yes, Yitzchak.
Satma has a website.
Yeah.
And they have translated Vayom Moshe selections.
Selections. Say
in which you're going to read, they have.
Okay, but say that I'm reading from the original. And he says, in the last generation, we've had so much tzarat, never has the Jew suffered so much. And in the past, whenever we suffered, what did a Jew traditionally do? He made a cheshbon hanefesh. What do you say in davening? No, musaf, give it to me. U'mipnei chatatenu galinu me'artzenu. And he says, in this generation, we don't have to make a cheshbon hanefesh. It's obvious what we did wrong. And we went against the Shvuah. We took the land by force. What we did was horrendous and horrible. And it's an open Gemara that if you do this, God will punish you. Now, the Satma alludes to a terrible problem that faces him. My dear students, what do you mean? I said before Munkach, I said before Bells, I said before Sons, I said before Lubavitch. The early 1900s, talk began, again, I'll go into great detail a few weeks from now, not now, but talk began, we Orthodox Jews got to get together, got to organize. Started talking, called a meeting. World War I broke out. By 1919, Va'asu kulam aguda achat la'asot ritzon konam. I'm quoting from the davening on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Agudat Yisrael was organized. By 1919, there was a tremendous upsurge in Zionist feeling. Aguda now faced the challenge. Are you going to walk with the Zionists, or you're not going to walk with the Zionists? And Aguda declared, anyone who believes that there can be Jewish sovereignty in the land of Israel before Mashiach is a rotten, vicious, malicious, hideous, heinous, ruthless, depraved, degenerate, devout, surreptitious, malevolent, no good, apikoros. And he cannot be a member of Agudat Yisrael. And it doesn't matter how long his beard is and how big his payas are and how thick his gartel is. If he believes in Zionism, he is an eisvav, a trumpenik, a pushtak. He's out the door. Ah, that was Agudat Yisrael. Oh boy, those of you who were raised in Agudat schools or went to Pirkei, they don't like to talk about this. Artscroll avoids it. Oh, they don't get involved in their books. But truth is truth. And this was Agudat, 1919, 1929, 1932. And you know what happened, Hitler? Agudat today, this very day, they're getting millions of dollars at this day. I'm not talking about during the year, it's billions of dollars from the Israeli government. They sit in the government. They're part of every religious council. They fight to take over the chief rabbinate. My high, what happened here? Did they see the light? Well, if they saw the light, why not Satma? And I have to tell you in this introduction, time and again, there's not just a critique of the Mizrahi, there is an unbelievable critique of Agudat Yisrael. And he begins right at the beginning. How could Jews worship the golden calf? Ah, but the minute you have money, the minute you have gold, it attracts people who will sell their souls for material gain. And he says, we've seen in our own times that even Jews that were originally pious, originally from, originally dedicated, originally cared about the Gemara in Ketuvot, take a look the way they have been blinded by the material success of the Tzioniim, and Mitvesu Habeik Sheirim B'Yisrael Ki Gadol Koach HaYetza HaMisamare Nayim B'Zeh V'Lo Samu El Libam. And they were blinded. They were attracted. They joined forces. They forgot the Gemara. They forgot the Shvuat. They forgot Rak Hashem Yitbarach. Who is Hamishabed? He is the enslaver. This is quoting you, Michael. For who are Goel? And he can redeem us. Epis Buto Yitbarach Shmo. Goalenu Limot HaMashiach. Without God doing it, there can be no Geula before the Yemot HaMashiach. In the next paragraph, then he has to deal. So he's now eradicated Agudat Yisrael. Now I have to tell you, it's fascinating. Agudat today is a Zionist, more Zionist than most of the Chavrei Knesset sitting in the Knesset. Agudat, you take Rav Meir Parish, there's no greater Zionist than Rav Meir Parish. You take the 7th Lubavitcher Rebbe, Zeichet Tzadik V'Kadosh Levracha, the Rebbe, there was no greater Zionist. These were not real Zionists. They were not. They didn't sing the Hatikva. They didn't subscribe to all the Zionist theology. But Halacha L'maisa, they were the greatest Zionists in the world. Rav Meir Parish, I know from what that man did when he was in the Knesset, he just left in rotation to allow the Belzer representative, Eichler, to come in. Rav Meir Parish was the greatest friend the Jews of Itama had in Knesset Yisrael. The Lubavitcher Rebbe, so, all right, he now has taken them to task. He's let us know their sinners. No one says a word. No one will criticize Agudat today. But the followers of the Satmar, particularly the Eder Haredit, particularly the Natura Kata, that are inspired by Satmar, to a certain degree supported by Satmar. Endless money comes in from Satmar elements in Belgium, in England, in the United States. They don't let Agudat Israel forget. And in every issue of Al HaChoma, which is the Eder Haredit publication, or the more extreme element in the Eder Haredit, you will see reminders about Agudat Yisrael quoting the Yoel Moshe, declaring them the biggest apikursim treif naks in the world. Now, in the next paragraph, he takes aim at the Mizrahi. And here you have a tremendous question. Gentlemen, nothing works like success. How do we know that Gris Kollel or Torah Shraga are good programs? How do we know? No, you do a survey. Gris Kollel is around since 1978. Hundreds of students have gone through Gris Kollel. You take a survey. 99% of Shomer Shabbos. 90% learn Torah every day. It claims 30% are in the act of wrapping it. All right. Some are very left. I don't know if we're proud of them, not proud of them, but the overwhelming majority is solid. Nothing works like statistics, like success. How do we know Torah Track? How do we know BMT? The granddaddy of all the one-year programs. How do you judge BMT 42 years after it was established? The late BMT, thousands of kids went there. Today, these people are all grandparents. Look at them. Look where they're at. Look what percentage came in Aliyah. Look what percentage are famous American rabbis. Look what percentage remains Shomer Torah Mitzvah. That's how you judge success. You talk about the Mizrahi. Look at the Mizrahi. Look at the success. Look what's going on today in the Israeli army. Look how Haaretz and the leftist went crazy that the prime minister appointed his military advisor, Reb Yaakov Amidrar, Talmud Chacham, Yerei Shemayim, long beard, sits at a general, major general in the IDF Defense Forces. A good friend of Rabbi David Miller came to BMT, came to Gris a number of times. So look what's going on. Look at the success. How do you deal with it? And here in this next paragraph, he rips the heck out of Mizrahi, that they become terrible sinners. They follow these secular Zionists. They go into the army. They use guns. They rebel against the nations of the world. They rebel and climb up the wall. They believe HaKol Talui B'Zroa Basa U'Kli Zion. They are total, absolute sinners. And because the Zionist movement is so successful, they finally become totally like them. Noflim v'resha kaminit legamrei al yedei hagesha shel hadatiyim hanispachim el chatzioniyim. And they're totally lost. It becomes a one-way bridge. And all the Tzionim who originally were Datiyim and with Mizrachistim, they become irreligious, march over the bridge and become like the general Zionist. Now, I don't have to tell you, at the time the Satmar Rebbe wrote this, there was truth to it. I want you to know that many kids went into the army wearing a kippah. They went into the army, they threw the kippah away. And we have examples, people who today are generals in the IDF, who were frum kids. I know one of them, I knew his parents, and then he was a frum kid, and he went to the Gush, and he studied with Rabbi Yehuda Ramital and Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein. He today is a general in the Israeli army, he does not wear a kippah. There, and when you don't wear a kippah, it's a sign already of how far you've gone. And there are other generals who do wear a kippah. But I have to tell you, it has changed. Today the movement is in the other direction, and as you all know, the Baal Tshuva movement in Israel is here to stay. It's powerful, it's effective. We have our problems. At times it's too right-wing. At times we would like to see more like Machon Meir rather than what's the big one, Or Sameach. But nevertheless, Shmirat Shabbat is Shmirat Shabbat, and that's where it all begins and ends. And what the Satmar Rebbe is reacting to would not be true today. But in the 50s and the 60s, there certainly was truth. The Kibbutz Adati had a terrible problem with many of their children who received this fine, open, beautiful, religious Zionist education, and many of their children became secular Zionists. And it was a real problem which they have addressed and are trying to address today. They have yeshivot and kibbutz adati. It's a different world. But the Satmar Rebbe, excuse me? So beside what you're saying is, the minute you're exposed to the big world, you have the problem, and you're absolutely right. The same thing with the Moroccans, with or without Ben Gurion, many would have fallen away in that generation. But anyway, it doesn't matter. I just want to make clear to you, don't shoot me down and say, what's the Satmar Rebbe talking about? Today, more northern Tel Avivers, more northerners become from than people become daplashim, datiyim l'shavar. When the Rebbe was writing this, there was truth. So he winds up dismissing Agudat Yisrael, putting the pin into them, that they joined with the Zionists, they joined in making Jewish sovereignty possible. He puts the pin into the Mizrahi, for all your frumkeit, for all your observance, you are rebelling against God, you're climbing the wall, you're fighting with guns, and he says you're going against the Gemara, and that's why Hitler came to the world, to teach you what happens if you don't listen to Torah, you don't listen to God, you don't listen to the Gemara. You will be slaughtered, and your meat will be like the meat of the beasts in the field. Fine. Yeah, I haven't said anything yet.
It's rather offensive that he begins by saying that the tradition among Jews is to examine what they've done wrong and see
right.
They be punished, and he proceeds to attack everybody else but himself.
But himself. If I wanted to be a wise guy, I would tell you in one sentence, mm-hmm. Did you study psychology? He was saved by the Jewish agency. I told you the story. I told you the story with the shidduch, with the girl, with the woman. You know what I'm talking about? There were three girls who were classmates in an early Stern College class. And the two of them were nice looking and, feminine personalities. One of them was, a more masculine personality. And the other two girls got married happily, husbands who adored them. Each one had four children, and the other girl was not married. And lo and behold, all three came in Aliyah. And one of the girls lived in Tel Aviv with a husband and four children, and lo aleinu, that damn cancer, and she died. Now, you now have a yeshiva college graduate 1 year ahead of me, or 2 years ahead of me, with four little children. You understand? I don't understand men who fight for custody of children. The last thing in the world I think a male wants is to have to raise four little children. Ask Mendel. His wife left him for a week and he was ready to commit Harry Carey. So, I'm serious. So the woman who had four children in Jerusalem made a shidduch between this Alman and the girl who had never married. And she was a girl that had no chance of getting married. I have to tell you, the shidduch worked out magnificently, and she raised those four daughters just like her own children. Each one is a gem. Those daughters today are grandmothers. You have no idea what I'm talking about. No, someone made a shidduch for you. You had no chance of getting married. Overnight, you had a very nice, fine, dignified, pious, decent, upright husband, and you had four daughters. She and the Shadchanit never spoke again. So when that happened, this many years ago, I have an inquisitive mind, I'm a Talmud of the Rav. I yet saw Rebbetzin Pesha Feinstein Soloveitchik, who was just like her son, and my Rebbe. So I did a little research, and I studied psychology in college. Maybe that's why I have two children, at least, who are pretty. One has a master's in art therapy, the other one is in special ed. So they've been in psychology. So I did research. And you know what the answer is? It's amazing. Life is based upon gomlim. Gomlim isn't the Gemara. It means none of us. The Rav once gave a talk, a fabulous talk that only the Rav could give. Rav Aaron Cutler, Rav Moshe Feinstein, no one else was capable of this. He gave a talk on Robinson Crusoe. Is Robinson Crusoe a Jewish ideal or not? And he developed the idea that on one hand we do accept Robinson Crusoe, on the other hand we don't. In other words, we are individuals and we have to live like individuals, and on that level we can admire Robinson Crusoe, but we're also part of a community. No one can do it all alone. And a Jew has a dualistic existence as a Yachid and as a member of Klal Yisrael. All right, fine. This is beautiful. Now, what does it mean, a member of Klal Yisrael? Gomlin, what does Gomlin mean? I wake up in the morning, I need a minion, so I have to be thankful to 9 other people for helping me make a minion. I want to get bread for breakfast, I have to be thankful to Berman's Bakery or Angel's Bakery or Chveis, the OU breads in the New York area. People bake, people deliver. This is life. No, I would like to educate my children, but I go to work, I send them to school. How have I in my kitchen have a good Rebbe? If the kid has a good Rebbe, I give the Rebbe a gift for Purim, right? Chanukah geld, a Purim geschenk. You know, that's when you gave the Rebbe a gift. You don't remember those days. I remember in Yeshiva Salanta, the Rebbe would say, well, boys, Chanukah is coming. Oh, I wish I had an electric shaver. They just came out with a new Schick or a new Remington. You don't remember those days. So you gave your Rebbe a gift. That's Gomlim, you understand? But so naturally speaking, we can pay each other back. You understand? I gave someone this morning a gift, a picture that's going to be in back of my book. All right. So I gave him this picture, which to him was valuable. Fine. How does he pay me back? Very simple. I want him to go, be a Talmud Chacham, a Yerei Shemayim, a professional, live in dignity. When I hear 2-3 years later, Rebbe, you inspired me and I did this and that, we paid each other back. Sometimes you do a favor that can't be paid back. You save someone's life. When you save someone's life, he knows he can't pay you back. So he either hates you or loves you. You understand what I'm saying? It's either total love or total hate, because he can't face you. And that's exactly what we're talking about here with that lady. They never spoke to each other. It's just sad. That part of the story is sad. But that's life. The Jewish agency saved the Satmar Rebbe. Everyone knows it. He was on the Kastner train. It is a fact. Whether Kastner was good or bad, I can't get involved now. And I don't know enough to have an opinion. I can only talk about Hatzalah, that you're going to have to select. That you can't criticize him, and his concept was the Noah, I told you, was the Noah Ark concept. Just like on the Ark, there were 2 of each animal, the same thing, he wanted to take a few of each type of Jew, irreligious, religious, Satma, Aguda, Mizrahi, communist, socialist, anarchist, etc. Save the Rebbe. So the Rebbe's hatred is unbelievable. And you can explain it psychologically. If I want to say that, then there's nothing to lecture about. But I want to deal with him, you see. I want to give you the tools. How do you refute the Satmar Rebbe? And I will give you those tools, Be'ezrat Hashem. But first, I want to understand this opinion. Okay. Then he goes further. After he ripped the hell out of the Agudistim and out of the Mizrachistim, he comes to a theme that you will hear a million times over. I heard it in Staten Island in a kollel there in Balei Tshuva. Ribbono Shel Olam, I take all their rebbeim and line them up against the wall, etc. To raise kids 25 years old who are absolute clones. It's frightening. It's mob psychology. Frightening. It is cults, frightening. That's not Torah, I'm sorry. But a kid told me, that's Torah. Well, gentlemen, at times we fly off the handle. That's part of life. The Rav, I don't have to go any further. Who can forget when he said you can't use legume derivatives on Pesach, and someone asked him about corn syrup? This goes back, you can read about it in Louis Bernstein's doctorate on the RCA. It goes back to the early 50s. I was sitting in the audience. He flew off the handle. The next day, the owner of Barton's, Mr. Klein, and his lawyers were in yeshiva, threatening Dr. Belkin with a multi-million-dollar lawsuit against the yeshiva because their product was disgraced in public by Rabbi Soloveitchik and the Yoyu Gives Heksher, and they used corn syrup. This was that year. Fine. You fly off the handle. Take my word for it. Even if I fly off the handle today, I know why I'm flying off the handle. Because I know hundreds, if not thousands, are listening. So I have to be able to support every syllable I say. But when I was a kid teaching in BMT without the whole world listening, at times I flew off the handle. I usually fly off the handle. So the Satmar Rebbe comes along, and he not only dismisses the Agudistim and the Mizrachistim, but he declares that the Zionists aided and abetted the Holocaust. They cooperated with Hitler, and to quote the Satmar Rebbe's words, the more Jews they could kill, the greater the chance that they would get a state of Israel when the Holocaust ended. These words, can you tell me who echoes them? Where do you see them again in print? No? Rabbi Weissmandel, Nitra, in his famous volume that they wouldn't allow into Israel for years, you were not allowed to bring that volume into Israel. But Rabbi Weissmandel, this is Nitra. Now, and he accused this Zionism of abetting them, in helping them. You ask why there was a Holocaust? It's an open Gemara. You went up the wall, you rebelled against the nations, and God is punishing you, just like it says in the Gemara. And you know something? These very terrible sinners were the ones that led the Nazis on. Gentlemen, I want to tell you something. It may very well be. There was a Zionist leader or two who said, with all the death going on, the only compensation we have out of it, the only solace, is that the nations of the world will give us a Zionist state afterwards. There may have been one or two leaders who said it. Absolutely. But that doesn't mean you judge the whole movement, and it doesn't mean you take the words out of context. At times, we all have said foolish thoughts. When you listen to them in context, it's a lot better. You may not agree, but at least you understand it in context. To go and say that the Zionist movement, who were the only ones who risked their lives, who sent parachutists behind enemy lines, I don't have to tell you who Chana Senesh was and others, and risked lives and Aliyah Bet and the whole Bricha, and what the Zionist movement attempted to do, and ultimately Kastner, who saved the Satmar Rebbe, Chas v'chalila, how can you say this? But the Rebbe says it, and we can understand psychologically why. And I will always tell anyone who throws this at me, you may be right. So what? So one individual said this. So what does it prove? In what context did he say it? Lo aleinu. Jews were being butchered. Jews were being killed. We had no choice. There was little we can do. Who led the demonstrations against Hitler? In the late 30s, when Agudat Yisrael said Chas v'chalila to demonstrate. When the Rav said Chas v'chalila to demonstrate. Why did the Rav become a Mizrachist? One of his main reasons was he saw how faulty, how terrible, how horrendous the viewpoint was, shtadlanut, and not yelling and shouting. Who filled Madison Square Garden? My parents went. Everyone knows the whole garden, I think it's seated 25,000 people. There were 25,000 people in the garden and 25,000 people outside the garden. Late 30s, demonstrating against Hitler. Agudat Yisrael refused to participate. And Moriu Rebbe then was on a good taste. Later, you know what he said. That we have to add, and al chait al chait shechatanu lufanecha sheshamanu what called tzakat achenu b'yarapa v'lo asinu dai v'lo asinu maspik. I'm quoting Rebbe now, word by word. If you want it in English, look into the Rav by my good friend Aaron Nakefet. David, so the Satmar Rebbe here, you know, I don't get too impressed. And I don't deny you. Other people say to a kid, 25, say to you, my Rebbe told me the Zionists helped the Nazis murder the Jews. And they said, the more that will be murdered, the quicker we'll get a state. I don't say to the kid. So maybe someone did say. So what? What's the whole statement? And think about it. Maybe he's right. 6 million Jews are being butchered and being killed. Obama agrees with him. What did Obama say? Obama, who's the first president of the United States, who has absolutely no understanding of what the state of Israel is, has no concept that this is our, the Jews around him have no concept that this is our homeland, this is what we daven for, the Jews around him don't daven, and they don't know what Yerushalayim is and Shivat Zion. And Obama says, yes, the world had pity on them and gave them a state after the Holocaust. Quote, unquote, I'm quoting Obama. Okay? President of the United States. How many Jews voted for him? So, the Satmar Rebbe, I don't deny it. Some people said it. So what? Look at the total picture. Okay. Let me go further. I'm quoting now a very famous paragraph, Daf Tet. I will tell you in advance, only a chassid can understand this. Alright, I'm not a chassid, so I can only quote it verbatim. To understand it, I have my problems. But he quotes the Gemara in Sidushami. The Rav, I've said this Gemara over many times from the Rav. The Rav asked the question, Avinu Malkeinu Chatanu Lefanecha. And then we go in, you know, we say all the chataim, al-chei shechatanu lefanecha, anachnu la'avoteinu, we mention our fathers, and we list out sins, and again we mention our fathers. What right? Anachnu la'avoteinu. What right do we have to blame our fathers? Well, who are we? We're only here because of our parents. We're only good Jews because our parents sacrificed the Torah. Why are we blaming our parents? So the Rav said, no. He said this in a tshuva drasha, that the Gemara says, Dor shalom nivna beit hamikdash b'yamav nechrab b'yamav. See, you show me. Kol dor shalom nivna beit hamikdash b'yamav kiyu nechrab b'yamav. If you don't build the beit hamikdash, it's like you're destroying it. Our parents didn't build the beit hamikdash. That's the sin we're talking about. And that right, that sin, we have a right to say. So the Satmar Rebbe says that he quotes the Midrashim that there's a Beit Midrash Shomata and a Beit Midrash Shomala. Yerushalayim Shomata and Yerushalayim Shomala. I refer you to an article by Arnie Rothkopf that appears in Rakafet Aharon Chelek Aleph, which was published in the 60s, that deals with Jerusalem. And there you get the sources, the heavenly Jerusalem and the earthly Jerusalem, if I can use those words. So he goes in that there won't be an earthly Jerusalem until the heavenly Jerusalem is constructed. Who builds the heavenly Jerusalem? Avodat Hatzadikim. The tzadikim, in their avoda, in their service, in their dedication, in their mesirat nefesh, they build the heavenly Jerusalem. Once that will be built, the earthly Jerusalem will be built. And he tells the story, Pamachat, Oma maram hakodesh mitzenz baal divrei chayim seichet tzadik lechay olam haba. Great relative, the sons of a Rebbe, Reb Chaim Halberstam, the divrei chayim, One time, b'shulchana tahar, you know what shulchana tahar means? Chassidic Rebbe, you have a tish. How many of you have been at a tish? If you haven't been to a tish, you don't know what chassidus is all about. Go to a tish. So go to Ger for sudashli shit, but wear old clothes because there's a tremendous push of the crowd. You don't want to rip a new shirt or new pants, so wear your old pants and your old shirt for sudashli shit. And at the Sudah, by the way, the present Gever Rebbe doesn't speak in public. That's a new concept to me. There were Rebbeim like that before. Could you picture a Rosh Yeshiva? Imagine if I didn't speak in public. What kind of world would it be? Imagine if the Rav Lahavdil between a little dummy like me and Mori Rebbe didn't speak in public. But a Rebbe can get away with anything. So Pam b'shulchanah ha-tahar at a public tish, his holy table, the sense of a Rebbe said, I have built the base hamikdash upstairs. It's almost complete. All that's lacking is the parochah. So one of the chassidim sitting at the shulchan shouted out to the Divrei Chaim, Rebbe, why don't you build the parochat? And the Rebbe answered, I did build it, but a Rasha gadol b'ma'asav kara abto, a terrible individual with his own two hands ripped it apart. And we don't know who he means. It could be he means Theodor Herzl. What would have to be checked out was whether the Divrei Chaim was still alive at the time when that they were alive at the same time, I know. But was the Divrei Chaim still alive at the time that Theodor Herzl started the miracle of putting the Zionist movement on the map? Or maybe he means the Russia Gadol, the people who organized the Mizrahi, the Rabbanim who organized the Mizrahi, the Rabbanim who spoke about Shivat Zion. He doesn't explain. But the Satmar Rebbe makes clear, we Ungarische Rebbeim, our leaders were so great and so holy that they had the Beis Hamikdash Shemala almost complete. All that was lacking was the parochat. But those rotten Zionists came along and destroyed the parochat. And this is the terrible sin of Zionism. And on page 11 he says, if you take the Zionists and put them on one part of the scale, and on the other part of the scale, you put the sins of all the Jewish people that are alive, you will see that the sin of Zionism weighs them all down. The greatest, most terrible sin, rebelling against God, attempting to establish Jewish sovereignty in the Holy Land on their own before Yemot HaMashiach. Wow. All that Gemara that we began with 40 minutes ago. Now, Satmar Rebbe had a lot of enemies. In Europe, he was attacked on every side by the Mizrachistim. But he fought back, bullet for bullet, missile for missile. Page 16, he speaks about all the bullets, that's the very word he uses. Hamorim chitzimu bullis tarat. Aden Shayur, he says, I know very well that the religious Zionists, and these were his biggest enemies, because the irreligious Zionists didn't give a hoot what the Satmar Rebbe said. But the religious Zionist, you had family after family. Part of the family followed Herzl, and part of the family followed the Munkacher, Lubavitch, Bells. Satmar was not there to play them. And he says, the greatest problem we have are the datiyim, the yoter hadatiyim, hanichrayim, hanigrarim achareihem. They are our greatest problem. And they're constantly attacking me, and they're constantly cursing me. Avorechet Hashem Asheya Atzani Shaloli Hashem Klau im Kol Divrayim Ke Efes Ukaayim Hamuchlat. And he says, I thank God that I had the power to withstand all the bullets, all the missiles, and all that they believe is batel umavutal. And I pay no attention to them. And he says, halavai, I pray to Hashem Yisbarach that he should open their eyes, they should see the truth, and perhaps then we will be zeicha to the gula shlema. Now, I have to tell you another comment on that paragraph with Ephes v'ayim, and I pay no attention to them. That's a very important Torah trait. If we start paying attention to everyone around us, we will crumble, we will cave in. And the Rav used to quote Rav Amiel, Dashanim, I don't believe it was Rav Amiel, it could be it was Rav Amiel, but he used to quote Dashanim, that he once heard a drasha from a Pelish Rav, and he said the Rav, that he heard this drasha from, hit the nail on the head. The Rav raised the question, how did we Jews have the ability to survive a long diaspora? How did we have the ability to survive so much persecution? How did we have the ability to survive so many people mocking at us, mocking at our way of life, mocking at our separatism, mocking, as you saw from the summer rose, mocking at our tefillin? How do we have that ability to survive? And the Darshan said, we learn it out from Bitul Chametz. A Jew had the ability, he could be Mavatl the Chametz, it's Afra the Ara, it's not worth anything to him. For all the money in the world, you couldn't bribe him to take whiskey on Pesach, etc. And this is the way we have to act to the Ummah, to Olam, to the New York Times, to everyone around us. Bitul Chametz, you have no influence on us. You're Ka'afra the Ara. That's the Sapna Rebbe here. Okay, so David Pardo is sitting here and thinking, all right, the Satmar Rebbe was extreme. He was Satmar. He was Munkach. Yeah, but who else agrees with him? I want to show you something. The most enlightened Jew, the man whom we all look back to as one of the precursors of Yeshiva University, the man whom the Rav had to spend so much time explaining why he differs from him, because everyone prima facie would say that the Rav is a follower of. The man, Rabbi Revel, there was a whole exchange between a guy named Rakefet and Professor J.J. Schachter over Rabbi Revel's outlook, and everyone immediately put Rabbi Revel in the camp of this individual, Rav Shimshin Rafal Hirsch. You look into the Hershey and Sitter, and I thank my student, Dr. Alan Blau, for bringing this to my attention, because I would always quote a certain letter Rav Hirsch wrote, and he got in touch with me and said, Rebbe, you don't have to quote an esoteric letter, it's right in this Sitter. I'm looking to the Hirsch Sitter translation and commentary by Samson Rafal Hirsch, published by Feldheim, 1978. My son-in-law, my baby son-in-law, who was born a Yekka, owns the Siddur. I borrowed it. I Xeroxed it. Teka b'shofa gadol l'cheiroteinu. And Rav Hirsch comments, you all davened it this morning. We all davened it. This is the plea for the gula of the entire Jewish community, for whom there can be no cheirot while in Golot. Its redemption will begin only once all its members will be gathered together out of this dispersion in order to be reunited. But such a reunion cannot be brought about by human action, or even only through the intermediary of human effort. We must wait for God Himself to sound the shofar. Any allegation, it's a funny word, any statement, any viewpoint, any allegation that deliverance can be obtained by other means than those is nothing but dangerous folly. F-O-L-L-Y. Gentlemen, that is Rav Simson Rafal Hirsch alluding very prominently to the Gemara in Kfuvat. That is not the Satmar Rebbe. And I would call it, Yitzchak, relax yourself. And I got a whole list of
philanthropic endeavors for Palestine.
Didn't he have no? Hildesheimer had. You're confusing.
But he also did.
No. You're confusing two people. I'm going to give you a source now with that. That'll show you what
Hildesheimer did.
Hildesheimer is a different story.
But he also he left in his will. There's a whole discussion about in his will.
Bring it and show it to us. Anyway, okay. Listen to me carefully, gentlemen. There's a letter that I often quoted. The letter is Reb Tzvi Hirsch Kalisha, or Reb Shmuel Malavai, it was Kalisha, was in touch with Reb Hirsch, and he wanted him to get involved in Zionist activity. And he was writing what? About a mitzvah, the Ramban, and Reb Hirsch answers him, what you consider a small mitzvah, I consider a great sin. So you see, he was Ne'eman to this Gemara. He was at home in Germany. He was integrated in Germany. He loved German literature. Don't you remember on the 100th Yahrzeit, or the 100th year of birth, rather, of Schiller, he delivered one of the most moving analyses of this German author, poet, thinker, declared him from the Hasidei Umat HaOlam. And when the Zionist horn began to blow, the shofar was sounded, he did not respond. Now, it is true, historically, the overwhelming majority of the members of his own family became tremendous devotees of Torah Derech Eretz, Torah V'Avoda, Kibbutz Hadati. A good deal of it was built by family members and disciples or disciples of disciples of Rav Shimshon Rafal Hirsch. I don't have to go any further than his direct descendants. I knew both of them, Rabbi Mordechai Broder and Professor Mordechai Breuer. I don't think you can find greater examples of what religious Zionism is all about than those two individuals. Rabbi Mordechai Breuer, whenever he met me, he would stop boxing with me because he accused me of making my son-in-law, a Yekka, who was his dentist and my dentist, into a big, big right-wing religious Zionist. And Rav Breuer was more in the Rav Amital and the Rav Lichtenstein religious Zionism overview. But this is Rav Hirsch speaking. Gentlemen, what do we do? How do we handle this? What a challenge. David Berger, when you listen to the recording, you will pick up, I began with an open Gemara. What do we do with an open Gemara? Vifa Enfitten does. We're sitting here. Eretz Yisrael. Rakefen has a book coming out which can only be described in two words. Religious Zionism. That's the description. Forget about from Washington Avenue to Washington Street. A chronicle of a religious Zionist. I actually titled the book, From Washington to Washington Street, a scholarly memoir. I want to differentiate it between an art scroll book and something that left my pen. and the people who have read it, they suggested an historical memoir. But I was a little hesitant to use the word historical, because it's like someone will say, oh, he thinks it's important. Well, let the world judge whether it's important or not. But a scholarly memoir I will stand on. I worked very hard. Any word I say there, any fact, my opinions are my opinions. I can be right or wrong. But the facts, every word there, I stand on 99.99%. Yes, yes, Nachum. No, but say to relax yourself, because there wasn't the Zionist movement, but it comes up a little bit with the Tzfat, with the Talmid Akra, but you're right, but there wasn't the Zionist movement. I'll deal with that, I'll explain it all to you, but later on. Okay, gentlemen, the question is a tremendous question. Let's begin. It's going to be an answer with many, many different parts. So that if you're ever accosted with this question, and you feel the person will listen to an answer, you will be prepared. If you feel it's just someone telling you das Torah, cult person, tell him you're not an idol worshiper and just walk away. Don't get involved in debate, because this is sick. This, what I have seen in life, this is sick. S-I-C-K. Shem Yerachim. It's like a messianic Lubavitcher. You can't reason with them there. Oh my gosh. Wow. Cracked. Sad. I can deal with that too. If you recall my lectures in the Musa movement on why there was opposition, you don't open up someone's psychic unless you know how to put it together properly. Gentlemen, one of the greatest Jews I ever met, and I only met him through Protexia, because by the 1960s he did not speak to anyone. Reason is very simple. All the other books I wrote, I was confident I would finish them. I was a youngster. 6 books, but each one represents a younger period of life. My work on Washington Avenue, I prayed to God, give me strength and health, because as you know, these last 11 years, unfortunately, I've gotten many sad phone calls. You grow older, you grow older. It's a reality. Thank God we grow older. Rav Menachem Kasha left America, came back to Israel, and he already was in his late 60s. Didn't speak to anyone. Just working on Torah Shlema, wanted to finish it. Ultimately, he didn't finish it entirely in his lifetime, but he left the crew and enough research that they were able to finish it even after his death. We have the entire Torah Shlema today, unlike the Osa HaGoinim, which was never finished, and unlike Tosefta Kepshuta of Rav Shaul Lieberman, which was never finished either. Had I had protexia, because Reb Lazer Silver was a tremendous help to Rav Kasha in raising funds for him, in helping him to publish the initial volumes of Torah Shlema. So a number of times when Reb David Silver, the son of Reb Lazer Silver, visited Israel and he went to see Reb Menachem Kasha, he took me along. And Rav Menachem Kasha couldn't say no to Reb David because of Schut Avot. And I have to tell you, the conversations I had with Rav Menachem Kasha motivate and pulsate and guide me until today. Who is Rav Menachem Kasha? Who is a Gera Chassid from the old country? Who is like Rav Zevin, Shlomo Yosef Zevin? He was a Lubavitcher Rav Zevin. He was a Gera. Both of them knew Torah Kol HaKula. You take Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein and multiply him to the third power. The knowledge was unbelievable. And they lived with the Jews and they live with today, and they were Zionists. And it was just to talk to Rabbi Menachem Kasha. But I want to tell you about his published writings. After the Vayom Moshe came out, he was the only one in the world to publish a response to the Satmar Rebbe. I'll give you a source, not today, but next week perhaps, if we reach it. The Torah world did not take the Satmar Rebbe seriously on this level. whatever the reasons were, they felt they didn't have to refute him, they just ignored him. The Satmar Rebbe knew that and suffered from it. Agudah remained Agudah, Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah remained Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah, Rav Moshe remained Rav Moshe, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky remained Rav Yaakov, and etc. And no one was overwhelmed by the Satmar. Rav Menachem Kasher came out with Hatkufa HaGedolah, 1968. Right after the Six-Day War. He had really been working on it before. It was a magnificent work. It certainly was, I would say, given a spurt by the Satmar Rebbe's other publication, which we'll talk about later, not now, but when we deal with Agudah and what was happening in Israel, Al HaGula V'Al HaTmura, and what a volume. The only criticism of the volume is it's too big. It is an overkill. Have you ever seen? I have the original edition. It must be about 750 pages. It's an overkill. It has so much material in it. Put out by Machon Torah Shleima, 1969. Every source you will want on refuting the Satmar Rebbe and dealing with the Gemara in Tuvat is in that
volume. Never translated?
I don't believe it was ever translated, as far as I know. Hatufa Gadola, maybe parts of it. Of the Hatufa Gadola, 750 pages. Okay, gentlemen.
That's the book that deserves a doctor.
The Hatufa Gadola. Oh, yeah, Mendel. Yeah.
Did he have the same kind of? Rebbe compared him to Rosetta. Yes.
No, well, he went into a different world. Rav Zevin, no. Rav Zevin, you have to give credit that he revolutionized the writing of Torah in modern times. Shmirat Shabbat Kehilchata is a direct result of Rav Zevin's writings. Rav Kasha became encyclopedic. So what he did, it's not on a popular level. It's Torah Shleima. But his ability to deal with Kitvei Yad, to deal with variant readings, is unbelievable. In addition, he was a posek mufat. No one wrote more Divrei Menachem on the Erev in Manhattan than Rav Menachem Kasher. You follow? Which ultimately translates to the Erev in Brooklyn and all the problems we have with Erev in modern cities, where you have 100 million people living, but you don't have a reshut to rabbi the oraita. There's no sratchu platcha. You follow? So it is a different style of writing. He was not the popular writer that Rav Zevin. Rav Zevin's greatness is, if you take Ish Halacha, the most difficult topics are there. A 10th grade kid in a yeshiva high school can understand him. And that's the Mardim B'Halacha. I mean, I cannot tell you what joy I have when I open up the Mardim B'Halacha. When I open up the Ishim V'Shita, I'd like to get the new edition. I have an older edition. I see the new one has more material. I'd like to get it. Gentlemen, let me come back to the way I began and end off the class. First of all, it's Divrei Agada. Divrei Agada don't determine halacha, don't determine hashkafa. Divrei Agada have to be understood within the context in which it's being said, but if everything around us disproves the Agada, so the Agada we dashen, but it's not something that affects us halacha l'maisa. It's not like halacha, which is determined by Beitin Shalmata, and whenever the burden Beitin determines, that is the halacha we must follow. The most famous example is the Gemara in Bav Metzia, Daf Nun Tet, where once halacha is determined, the Jews, the Amorayim, the Gedolei Israel, say to God, "Gut out, lo bashamayim hi, v'lo me'eva hayam hi, and don't get involved in the earthly debate." And that's halacha. And halacha we are obligated to follow. So, yes, Yitzchak.
I think a more powerful
example
is the story of Alonso being given water by Rivka when she's 3 years old, according to the Medrash.
Yeah.
And Abravanel says she was 17 with the innocence of a 3-year-old.
So what you're saying, that Agada we can understand on many different levels, whereas Halacha commands obedience. You all know the whole question with Avraham Avinu, how old was he when he discovered HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Look into the Rambam in Hilchat Avodah Zarah, and you'll see right in the Rambam how many variant readings there are going back to Midrashim. Right, this is very basic. But nevertheless, the Satmar Rebbe has challenged us. How do we handle it on a theological, philosophic level? Let's take the Gemara at face value. How do we handle it on that level? And gentlemen, let me end off. This is the most basic question of all. How will the future Geula come about? On a logical, rational, natural level, or will it be entirely beyond human comprehension? And here you have the unbelievable machloket. You have midrash on top of midrash, where Kadosh Baruch Hu says it's a very famous tanchuma. I destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, I will rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. Everything will be a gift from God. Look into Rav Kasha. You'll see source after source that talks like that. Well, no. There's a source in Yerushalmi Brachot, Perik Aleph, Halachal Aleph, right at the start. Kachi ge'ulatan shel Yisrael b'tchila kima. Natural. Slowly. But surely. Look into Rav Kasha, you'll see he calls the Medrash Shir Hashirim Rabbah that the Gulad Tida will be like the dawn. No, what is the dawn? Have you ever davened Vatikin? Aren't you amazed? You follow the clock and you're davening in Kriyat Shema and Birchat Techa, and just suddenly, as you're about to sing Shemoneh Esrei, there's daybreak. There's Richat Hachama. There's light. Slowly. Naturally. Well, where do you see this amach like this? It's not black and white. It's not the way the Divrei Chaim said that we got to build it upstairs. I have it built. Just the parochet is lacking. Gentlemen, we're only beginning. Take my word for it. We are just starting to roll. You have no idea how much I have ahead of me on this very topic. But let me reiterate. David, I am glad you got here, at least for part of the lecture. No one travels further than you do. Gentlemen, what did we do today? Okay. I wish we could end with Hester Panim. But I would be sinning against you if I said to you, this is it. Accept what the Rav said. Don't try to find reasons, because the streets are engulfed by people giving reasons, and our lives are motivated by many of these reasons. The greatest exponent or proponent in modern times of anti-Zionism, the Satmar Rebbe. And I gave you a little bit of the sweetness or the vinegar, depending upon how you approach it, of the Vayomer Moshe. What I quoted to you, you can expand and expand and expand, because he goes on and on bringing sources along the themes that I cited. There's no question, he is furious what are good at Yisrael, and he is angry at the Mizrahi. Religious Jews have added power to the Gemarin Ketubot and our punishment. What he says about the Zionists abetting and helping Hitler, I told you how to handle that. There may have then a Zionist leader or two who said something like that. I happen to know, yes. But it's very logical what they said. You have to know how they said it. They didn't say, kill the Jews. They just said, it's terrible that Jews are killed, but at least some good will come out of this. There'll be a Jewish state. You see already the way the left started attacking the decision to build 400 more homes in Eretz Yisrael because dancing on the graves, to use that expression. I'm paraphrasing what I heard in the news this morning. No? All right. And Min HaMeitzah, that was out of the Straits, it's translated into English, Rabbi Weissmandel, Michol Dov Weissmandel. I don't dismiss him. I understand what he's saying. But you got to see the greater picture. How do you refute the Satna? Said a few words about Rav Kasha and started to develop the idea of Kima Kima. But let me assure you, I'm only scratching the surface today. The heart is yet to come. Gentlemen, next Sunday and Monday, there are no classes. A major holiday knocks us out. It is known as Purim. Do me a favor. Do the Torah a favor. Don't get drunk. You can be Mekayim the Mitzvah the way my Rebbe did, the way the Balei Tosfot did. We're Litvish. Getting drunk. You take a little schnapps that you don't have regularly and you close your eyes. Believe me, when I'm asleep, I don't know the difference between Baruch Haman and Arum Mardechai. Take my word for it. Gentlemen, this is the book that Nachum lent me, and it's Rav Ba'olam HaChadash. It's a fascinating volume. These were all lectures that were given. Some of them are fabulous. Some of them didn't know the Rav. They're just guessing in the dark. Some of them are idiots for Shoyim Gemurim. One of them, I can't believe, Yitz Greenberg's piece, which I had read elsewhere. I can't believe that they would publish something like that. It's beyond words. But I guess everyone's entitled to their opinion. What's beautiful is what I told you yesterday is Tova Lichtenstein should live and be well. Dr. Tova's description of her father, the final piece in the book, is worth the entire volume. And I, in particular, am very happy because, I don't know, she's quoting me word by word, I don't know. It's two of us have the same take on the Rav. And you know, in this world, everyone says, Rakepit is not right enough, Rakepit is not left enough. This one, he didn't know the Rav changed, this, that, the other thing. Nope. Baruch Hashem, Tova, I think, knew her father. We're both on the same wavelength. And for those of you who are going to IU and will have Reb Heschel Schechter as a Rebbe, I gave him a copy of the article. You saw he was so excited Friday morning, he couldn't get over the article. So he too was overjoyed. So I want to thank you very, very much. And if anyone else, I have one more copy available for whoever. Mendy, you better take this because you're into philosophy. Remember the book, and you're going to need it one day. Also, if you gather around me, I'll show you a very interesting. You see, you were young. You were once young, and everyone was pious. This is a letter that arrived here from a student of mine many years ago. The colleague is now in Chinuch 20 years, Moshe Erlbaum. And he wrote to me, his father started listening to my Shayurim, Baruch Hashem, a beautiful, beautiful letter. So he sends me his father, the BTA yearbook, 1949. Take a look who BTA produced. This is my neighbor, Sam Dershowitz. PhD in textile chemistry, cousin to Alan Dershowitz. The only difference is he's a tzaddik and a big comfort chachma than Alan Dershowitz, but brilliant, brilliant, brilliant family. Who is over here? We just mentioned his name. this innocent-looking young man, Irving Greenberg. Okay? Yitz Greenberg. That's who it is. But yeah, all in one class, but you haven't seen anything. Gentlemen, Martin Chachana. You know who that is? Mayor Chachana. Mayor, you've never heard of Mayor Chachana?
He's joking.
Kach. Kach. There he is. Now, I wouldn't recognize him either. You've got to look closely. There he is. In my new book,
that
I have.
That biography. That big biography that his wife wrote.
Yeah. That picture's in there? Yeah. Okay, I'm in there too. In the, here, the. One second. The Debating Society. There's Yitz Greenberg. Okay? There he is. There's Martin Kahana standing up. Mayor and Yitz, right next to each other. Here's their, their Purim issue. Stargazer. Kahana demands Asia. Not bad. That's all I can say. Here's the faculty. You know who this is? Yechiel Lichtenstein, teacher and French and Hebrew, PhD, University of Nukhatel, 1933. Who is that? That's the Baron's father. His father had a doctorate. I think his mother only had a master's, but she may. Who knows? let's see. Here he is. This is the faculty. Can you pick out the Baron's father? This is his father, right here.
Really?
That's his father.
It's like
a world gone by. I'll tell you, here's an article by Martin Kahana, The Rebirth of Israel. I never had more nachat. Here's, from the 1950 yearbook, it's amazing. Most popular, Elihu Levine, Max Wagner. Wagner lives in Woodmere today. Elihu Levine lives in Yerushalayim. Many of these people I knew. Yeah. There's my friend Irwin Shapiro. These are all first-rate people. There's Dr. Lichtenstein again. Standing. I'll tell you a good story about him. One moment. Here's my friend Irwin Shapiro. Here's Alfred Sladowski, that Jit Sladowski. He lives in the Rapid today, he lives in Lawrence. 1952, the service squad in action. And one second, who is fighting there? Look at these little guys, they got fighting. Gentlemen, a little story to end off on Dr. Yechiel Lichtenstein. So BMT is born 1969. Raketved Rothkopf is on the original faculty. And David, I'll give you all these pictures. You can keep them, pass them on as you wish.
They put over here with some
say that, but the internet, you got to start schmecking and wrecking. Yeah, here, it's right in your hand. So, one second. BMT is born. So, 1972, my first book comes out. And BMT is trying to get a reputation. And this is a big moment because it was JPS. That's like saying today you have a book published by Harvard. JPS then was really something. And here's the first Orthodox book they published, and it's a faculty member at BMT. So they hold an affair in my honor and to get publicity, the Torah Culture Department, Jewish Agency, which is the sponsor of BMT, and Rabbi Lichtenstein is the speaker. His parents had just come in Aliyah, and he brings his parents. And here Dr. Yechiel Lichtenstein comes in. It's the old BMT. This is all happening on 24 Babanel. Well, be shortly to visit my mother. It's a senior citizens today. And Dr. Lichtenstein Sr. looks around. And here are these kids, your age, a little older, a little younger than some here, and they had been his students in BTA, and they were wild animals in BTA, like BTA kids were wont to be. And here he sees them with such derecherets for me, and they're so reverential. And he says to me, oh, man ishtanaka, like Dr. Lichtenstein in Hebrew spoke. Hebrew is the language he spoke. It's a native language, or the language he trained himself in. Man ishtana, hatalmidim ha'ilayim p'chera adam etzli, p'chera adam, wild Indians. And tis takel, right? So never I told him that him is takto, they're older, that kishalam duba beit sefer tichon ein yodim eich lahokir et ben adam, et adam gadol, et talmid chacham, v'chulo. Aval hayom, b'BMT kvar, l'achash natayim shalosh, yirayim, heim shana shniya b'michlala, shana shlishit, they're sophomores, juniors, hayom him kvar et siniyim. But boy, did I feel bad that Dr. Yechiel Lichtenstein, they walked all over, they were wild animals. And a little Annie Rothkopf from Washington Avenue in the Bronx, they treat with kid gloves. My dear students, until we meet again in health and happiness, I'm returning the manuscript within the hour to the top editor to tell her I have approved everything. I have four little questions to ask her until we meet again in health and happiness. Das Vidanya. Thank you very, very much.